last resort. It shouldn't be a last resort for Gaza today, where the large majority of the 2.3 million Palestinians are on the verge of famine or deliberate starvation, while food and water are a few kilometers away. The Biden administration reportedly sent three C-130 Hercules aircraft over Gaza. One military cargo plane holds the equivalent of one truckload of aid. We keep hearing that Gaza needs an estimated 500 trucks of aid every day at minimum. 500 trucks of aid is the pre-war figure that wasn't enough then. The trucks required today to feed the starving people of Gaza is much higher. Yet, 500 trucks are waiting just across the border in Egypt to enter Gaza, and the Zionist regime with America's backing is preventing them from crossing. They are opting instead for airdrops, which may come across as compassionate to some watching on TV, but the reality is it degrades Palestinians who have been devalued as human beings for nearly 5 months now. Rightly so, the U.S. measures have backfired, drawing sharp criticism from aid agencies and rights groups. Medical Aid for Palestinians said in a statement, "Instead of dropping packages from the sky, some of which end up in the sea or outside of Gaza, and which the most vulnerable cannot reach in any case, the U.S., the U.K. and others should ensure that Israel immediately opens all crossings into Gaza for aid and aid workers to assist those in need." The International Rescue Committee said airdrops are not the solution to relieve this suffering and distract time and effort from proven solutions to help at scale. What makes this remarkably shameful for the Biden administration is that not only has the White House enabled the starvation to be used as a weapon of war in Gaza, collective punishment is a war crime, but it is American weapons that have murdered and starved the Palestinians. The Zionist regime war on Gaza is enabled by arms made in the United States, which is pulling the strings in the war on the besieged territory and using its veto power at the UN Security Council to avoid a ceasefire. These airdrops are also inaccurate, as the US military has no control over precisely where the cargo will fall, leaving the dangerously large pallets parachuted off the back of planes to potentially land on a crowd of people in what is a very densely populated strip. And if they land in the sea, there is a serious risk of Israeli regime warships shooting at Palestinians desperate to collect them, with similar deadly incidents happening many times in the recent past. The UN has warned that famine in Gaza is inevitable unless aid deliveries increase significantly, with a quarter of 2.3 million population one step away from starvation. Starvation has already started to take the lives of Palestinian children. The World Health Organization data shows at least 10 children have been officially registered in a hospital as having starved to death. Highlighting the crisis in Gaza, a WHO spokesperson said, "The unofficial number can unfortunately be higher. The footage from Gaza looks like a powerful natural disaster has hit the territory, but this is nothing natural. The latest decision by the Biden administration highlights how much of a U.S.-Israeli man-made disaster the Gaza Strip has become. This is despite reports surfacing of Palestinians eating animal feed to survive and children dying from starvation as a result of malnutrition and dehydration.
Take pieces of bread from me, and your soul will never be broken. And if I am your haven, you will never be homeless. One whose cloak is me will never be naked. And one whose resort is me will never be destitute. God is above all powers. IRIB English Radio.
I'm a teacher.
I'm a researcher.
I'm a mother.
I'm a lawyer.
And I believe in acting kindly toward you, because you are
a Muslim lady.
You are very special. There's no one just like you. You are very special. And I'm so glad you're mine.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. Welcome back to a new episode of Muslim Ladies. Like always, we're here to talk about women's issue. And once more, I have the honor to be your host. Well, this is Asma, and here with me, I have Sister Rehane. Well, actually, she's going to introduce herself pretty much perfectly for you. Assalamu alaikum, sister, and welcome to Muslim Ladies.
Thank you very much, Sister Asma. I'm Rehane Paisapal, and I'm happy to be here with our dear listeners. I hope you have a wonderful day today.
Of course we would have. Since it's all ladies, then it's going to be wonderful. Well, just for the record, she is an Islamic researcher and she works on ladies' issues and whatever that matters to us as ladies generally. So previously on Muslim Lady, we talked about the history of hijab and also we talked about why hijab is important. We got through the very aspects of in our religion. Everything is into detailed about hijab because it was the complete religion. It was the religion that was to complete all the other religions. So, of course, all the details must be revealed in this religion and all the rules must be set out there for all the people to know where to go and how to do in their lives. Then the foundation was set. We talked generally about hijab, but we want to get into more of details and into more of information about hijab, like the things that have been mentioned in the Holy Book of Quran. So one of those things is the fact that women themselves are considered as these delicate creatures who've got a lot of adornment to share with other people, with the universe. So about these adornments, like about their beauties, there is also a verse that tells them to keep their adornments for themselves and do not reveal it aside for the people who are their close circles, like the mahram people, like what we have it in our religion. So let's talk on that as well.
Islam tells women to not show their adornments to non-mahram men. Of course, that means that women are free to not wear hijab in front of the mahram men in their family.
Like their fathers, like their husbands, brothers, yes. Uncles, and...
Yes, yes. The list can be found on the
internet. Yeah.
Yeah. Other than that, women must keep their beauties for themselves. And this is most beneficial for women themselves. Women are the primary beneficiaries of this. When women freely...
Again, is also mentioned in the Quran as well. It says that they do this and this and this, and this is better for them. This is going to protect themselves from the coming problems and issues.
Exactly. So in society, if women freely show their beauty, I mean, we can see examples of these, of this in some societies, Western societies mainly. But when women freely show their beauty to the world without any regards, in the end, it actually hurts themselves. It hurts the foundation of family. When women freely give away their beauty, men have no reason to give anything back to women. I mean, they can freely get whatever
yeah,
they want.
Without any responsibility.
Exactly.
They do not have to put themselves in an entanglement of marriage and problems. And, you know, it has got a lot of responsibilities to go to create a family, to be the responsible man of a family. So if all the women share everything for free without any subscription, so it's pretty much obvious that men would feel free.
Exactly. Like right now, there are many, I see on social media women complaining about men not meeting their standards and the bar being on the ground of women like being impressed by men's behavior. Like even a man opening a door nowadays would impress
yeah,
a woman.
Exactly.
But that is not the standard that Islam wants for women. Islam wants men to be protectors of women. قَوَّامُونَ عَلَى النِّسَاءِ. So they are protectors and providers for women. And in order to somehow create that motivation, women mustn't show their beauty, mustn't give away their beauty for free. So women must observe modesty and they must hide their beauty, and you know, they must say that this is a right that you have to gain to see my beauty.
Let's go for a short break and then we'd come to follow the rest. Welcome back and thank you for staying with us. Well, this is Muslim Lady. You're listening to Arab English Radio. I'm Asma and Sister Hani is here, and we're having quite an interesting topic to discuss about, which is hijab. And of course, we're getting into some details. Like, we came to the point that we should not show our adornments. This is a rule in our religion. And why this rule? Well, simply because to protect us from the problems. We already know, I guess there is no one in this entire world who could claim that women would not face any problem if they live their life freely and they dress up the way they like freely, as free as they wish to. But there is no one who could claim that, because even in the Western societies, there are a lot of movies, there are a lot of stories, there are a lot of books based on women harassment, like the way women are being harassed by men just because they look like this, just because they wear this sort of stuff. And even if they don't wear in a specific way, women are... unfortunately, the easy targets in society for the sick men, of course.
Of course, that is correct. I actually always like to say that hijab, wearing hijab, comes from a place of love. And that love is towards yourself and towards other women and towards other men
exactly.
as well. So, first of all, it comes from a place of love towards yourself, because by wearing the hijab, you announce to the world that I am more than my appearance. I am exactly. more than my beauty. I want you to hear what I have to say, know who I am before you see my beauty and before you judge me based on my appearance.
Exactly. So that's the point. I'm a human being. Do not look at me according to my appearance and do not take all these materialistic things about me. When you are going to think of me, of a person I am, try to look beyond my skin, beyond my features as a woman.
And that is what women, Muslim women, announce when they wear the hijab. And another aspect is love towards other women. And I think to explain that, I could just give the example of women having many body image issues nowadays because a lot of women just freely show the way they look, show their beauty to the world. And a woman who maybe is not blessed as much as the other one in terms of beauty might look at that woman, other woman, and say, well, why don't I look like that? And maybe I am worth less than exactly. that other woman. It creates many body image issues. So by covering yourself in society, that also eliminates the expectation for women to all be at
the same picture.
Exactly, and to be at the utmost level of beauty. So another woman might feel less pressure to
exactly.
be perfect in terms of their image.
Yeah, that's very true. As it just reminds me of peer pressure, like the thing that happens with teenagers. The same thing is happening to all the women in the entire universe. Like if you look at this fashion industry, it's actually creating a lot of sicknesses to the women from all around the world. Like the number of women with depression is increasing just because she cannot afford a perfect body, just because she thinks that she is lower than the other women. She feels like she is actually participating in a competition, in an unknown competition, and she knows that she's the loser. So she might go through depression just because other women are so much trying so hard to show this perfect picture, which does not exist in this world, you know? All as human beings, we might try to focus on appearance and we might create such a perfect appearance but and body. But unfortunately, what matters is the inside. And all what we see in today's world is that the insides are just going through too much of problems and issues.
Exactly. And unfortunately, the West has somehow went to the opposite direction in terms of solution. And they think that the solution to this problem is to have inclusivity. And so everyone must show what they look like, all body types. But that's just not feasible. That's not doable.
And under the pretext of freedom.
Exactly.
The thing which hurts so much is the fact they call it freedom. This is not freedom. This is actually a propaganda. This is a program you have enacted into the world in order to achieve whatever you want.
Exactly.
If these fashion industries stop working, then a lot of tycoons would go down. A lot of people with a lot of money are going to come down. They're going to be dragged down to the level of ordinary people because, you know, it's an industry. And how does industry work? You have to have people as your wage slaves, and also you have to have some consumers, and these consumers are unfortunately the victimized women.
Exactly. It's and women lose in this game, of course.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
It's quite interesting to think about this stuff. Let's go for another break, and then we'd come for the last word of today's episode.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Muslim Lady.
Yes, thank you for staying with us. Well, this is the last part for today's episode. We're still talking about women and how beautifully you just put it. I am wearing hijab because I love myself and because I share this love for other women as well.
Yes, and also for other men.
Yeah.
So the men in society, if I freely show my beauty to the world, to other men, even if they do not have sickness in their heart, a young man going through puberty maybe would if they look in society and see all these beautiful women and they don't have the resources to get married, it would be very frustrating for that man, and that man would grow with many
and go through
challenges.
Too much pressure.
Exactly, we go through so much pressure and challenges. And by wearing the hijab, I'm also showing compassion to other men in society. Maybe someone is already married, and if I show my beauty freely, that man might lose interest in his wife.
Exactly.
Or
and
maybe,
please do not say that these things are just legends and myth. They are things nobody think about in today's world, because these are just old-fashioned sort of thinking. No, it is not. Even we can see in TV series, in
exactly,
movies,
yes,
the things that they themselves create, the basic thing, trigger, that starts a conflict between a man and a woman is their free relationship with other men and women. If we want to be that perfect human being, perfect, obedient, at the service of God, we have to be virtuous, we have to look out for our manner, we have to just be so careful about every single thing we say and we do in society. And again, I have to mention this point, in society we're responsible toward each other. Like, it's not just I am getting whatever I wish, no, it's you are going to have impact on other people. And in the end, when this world is going to be finished, which is, of course, a fact, and we're not going to stay in here forever, we have to have answers in front of God. So you're going to be questioned. Whatever you do has got to have a logical answer. So, yes, this is all for today's episode. I hope you enjoyed it. Until another session, I bid you farewell. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Oh no, I'm waiting for something, something to happen to me. This waiting comes with trials and challenges. Nothing in life is free.
Food for thought.
Salam, and here we present you a statement from the Lord of the Age, Imam Mahdi, may God hasten his reappearance, who despite being in the state of occultation, keeps his wary eyes on the followers of the school of the Prophet's infallible Ahlul Bayt. We are neither negligent of caring for you, nor forgetful of you, and if it were not for that, hardship would have befallen you, and the enemies would have massacred you. So fear God and support us.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
Untold the Story.
In 2022, I spent 5 months living in Russian-controlled Donetsk in the Donbass region. I witnessed firsthand the Ukrainian army targeting and killing civilians whom it claims to be its own citizens. Now, of course, Ukraine has been shelling Donetsk for months now, indeed intermittently for the last 8 years. When they're not trying to hit military targets, they focus on civilian targets. It is a story that is crucial in understanding the Russia-Ukraine war. I firmly believe that by listening to the experiences of civilians on both sides, the world can better find avenues to peace. Caught on camera, a Ukrainian strike in the center of Donetsk. When I arrived at the scene, the body of 24-year-old Maria Pirogova was still lying on the street, covered in a blanket. Now, while many of the attacks by Ukraine in Donetsk are aimed at civil infrastructure or administration buildings, some are simple terror attacks against civilians. Maria was one of four victims of the strike. Two of the others were musicians. But this strike was nothing special, just another day in Donetsk. Whenever I had no other filming planned, I would simply chase the incoming. Sometimes they would land harmlessly in an empty street. At other times, I would arrive at a bus station or a market with bodies on the pavement and friends and family breaking down in tears. A common occurrence in Donetsk, a nighttime artillery barrage by the Ukrainian army. One of these attacks happened not long after I arrived in May.
We're just at a cafe. It's in the evening here in Donetsk. And there was massive incoming. All the civilians and their children ran down to the basement.
As I got closer to the impact site, the realization dawned. The missiles had landed 15 meters outside the front door of my own apartment building. To be honest, it shakes you up. The ambulances, the burnt-out cars, my shocked and shaken neighbors. As I walked over the smashed glass into my own apartment, the terror bombing of Donetsk had suddenly become very real.
For the last 2 weeks, I've been interviewing people who've been living under the shelling for the last 8 years. But now to be happening around my area for the Ukrainian government, to be targeting this neighborhood really brings home just what it's like to live in an area in which your government is directly shelling you and killing your civilians. But this story is so essential to understand this conflict. And over 10,000 people have been killed here in Donbass over the last 8 years, over 100 children. Just a few days ago, a child of five was killed in her apartment while she was watching TV. And this story of the Ukrainian government intentionally shelling and killing its own civilians over the last 8 years has just not been told in the West.
The school over the road from my apartment was hit, killing one, and a school on the neighboring street killing four. Rare was a day in 2022 without casualties. One day I was out filming in the adjoining city of Makiivka. We were told of a child recently killed and we stumbled upon her funeral. Her body in display in an open casket. Her neighbors and friends gathered to say their goodbyes and to support the family. At the gravesite, not a dry eye. A child killed in war is a special tragedy. A few days later, I went to speak to another family of a child killed. They shouted at me and told me to leave. Boris Johnson, Macron, you did this. Shame on you. Increasingly, NATO is supplying the weapons to kill their children. Alina is only one of more than 150 children killed by Ukrainian shelling in 8 years of war here. This footage was taken in 2014. A Ukrainian jet drops a bomb in the center of Luhansk. 8 civilians were killed. Unable to win on the battlefield, Ukraine resorted to bombing civilians in an attempt to dampen local support of the so-called pro-Russian separatists. It didn't work, instead strengthening people's resolve to declare independence and in 2022 to vote to join Russia. This is the Alley of Angels, a monument set up dedicated to the slaughter of children by Ukraine. And here in Oktoberski district, another monument to fallen civilians. The toys are for the children. While increasingly the slaughter of civilians by Ukraine is dismissed as Russian propaganda, here it is simply the reality.
A man just came up to me while I was filming And I told him that I was British, and he said, "Ah, yes, there are lots of people like you here in the last 8 years who came and ate at the best restaurants. We're supposed to be telling the world what's been going on here, i.e. the deaths of all these people." But he said they never told the truth.
But back in 2014, there was some honest reporting. This is a piece by CNN.
In this city, as the people of Donetsk sweep up the debris of their homes and livelihoods, they are hardened against a president they say is killing his own people. "We are Ukrainian, but they kill us," this man says. "So we probably need our own country, because these people in Kiev, they are not brothers for us." The shells hit these homes days ago.
Two people were killed outside this block of flats last Wednesday. One of them was a 50-year-old woman, the other a 34-year-old woman. Her husband, who won't talk to us, he says he's in shock, managed to make it down to the cellar with their little child, but she just didn't have the time. And this is a story that repeats itself over and over in dozens of apartment blocks, with civilians being killed by the constant shelling around Donetsk.
But over the years, journalists stopped coming, and the bombing of civilians became Russian propaganda. The only journalists who remained were a motley crew of independent journalists like Patrick Lancaster, Eva Bartlett, and German journalist Alina Lipp, who came to Donbass in the summer of 2021, long before Russia sent its army into Ukraine.
Ukraine was intentionally killing civilians before February 22. There were a lot of cases where, in fact, really snipers intentionally killed people who were on their way to work or somewhere else. It happened quite a lot. And this wasn't a mistake, this was really intentionally. And I've seen also schools who were destroyed in those districts. First I thought that this is more a conflict between soldiers, so who kill each other, and not soldiers killing civilians.
In a worrying trend, journalists who do come to Donbass are increasingly facing persecution in European countries for doing so. Alina is facing 3 years imprisonment in Germany for her reporting, and has had multiple hit pieces written about her. Instead of reporting on the killing of civilians in Donbass, some outlets are resorting to attacking those who do. Others have had their bank accounts closed. I head to the front line on the outskirts of Donetsk with one of the Donbass militias. Ukrainian soldiers are only 100 meters away. The soldier stops as he thinks he hears a drone. Both sides are dropping grenades on each other. Our position is hit by a rocket-propelled grenade, and we are rushed underground. Europeans are once again slaughtering each other in the trenches in another brutal and unnecessary war. At its root, this is a civil war between Ukrainian nationalists who came to power in Kiev in 2014 and its pro-Russian population. The divisions in the country have been exploited to create a proxy war between NATO and Russia. As a result, dozens, often hundreds of soldiers on both sides are dying every day. While Russian casualty figures are high, Ukrainian losses are estimated to be many times higher due to Russia's overwhelming air and artillery superiority. Ukrainian men of fighting age are not allowed to leave the country, and the cemeteries are filling up. Well over 100,000 dead so far is the likely figure. NATO is fighting Russia to the last Ukrainian, a phrase often used, is proven correct. I hear this a lot in Donbass, that there is a genocide going on. In the West, it's dismissed as Russian propaganda, but it's difficult to argue with people who have lived under the shelling of civilians for 8 years. In 2014, the then president of Ukraine, Petro Poroshenko, made a speech which is etched into the minds of people in Donbass. At the school around the corner from my apartment in Donetsk, hit by Ukraine, I spoke to the parents of children who attended the school.
As a civilian, you get used to the shelling somehow. As soon as it's coming closer, of course, you're starting to be afraid. But usually, I mean, you hear it from the morning to the evening, shelling in your city. So you still have to buy your products. Of course, you have some meetings, you go to the restaurant, and you just keep on with your normal life. But there's always a kind of a pressure. You always think about when you're walking through the streets, okay, there's a lot of glass now, of the shops, I shouldn't be going there, or I should go better this street because this street was hit a lot in the last days. So there's always thinking about this war, about the fact that you could die any minute, and this is making a lot with you and making a lot with the families who live there. I mean, they can't plan their future. There are a lot of children not being born because of the war. And this is not very being seen in the West, I think, how hard it is for the people who live there already for 8 years.
Pushkin Boulevard in the center of Donetsk, back when Ukraine was refraining from hitting the center of the city.
Now, I was just in a hotel lobby near here just a few minutes ago. Huge explosions. Most people ran down to the basement. I've come to the scene right now. This is Pushkin Boulevard. This is essentially the beautiful pedestrian walkway in the center of Donetsk. Civilians walk here every day, strolling on their time off on a Sunday afternoon. This is an attack on civilian areas. It's nothing new here. They've been bombing the city all day today, like they do every day, the Ukrainians. This is just a pedestrian street on a Sunday afternoon that they target.
And around the corner, a cafe I used to frequent often.
This is Cafe Onegin. This is in the center of Donetsk. It was hit by a Ukrainian missile, just landed just outside these windows about 20 minutes ago. Now, I was literally myself sitting right here about 45 minutes ago, trying to take the morning off, watching World Cup football. And that's the reality of people living in Donetsk. At any moment, these missiles can land. Thankfully, nobody was killed in this strike.
Markets, too, are often hit. Increasingly, NATO weaponry and ammunition are being used.
The Ukrainians were told that people who live in the Donbas area are not really people anymore, that they are stupid, they are workers in coal mines and so on, and they are pro-Russian, and so they were kind of, you could say, brainwashed in the last 8 years by their own government. The government started to prohibit the Russian language and so on. They were told that it would be better that if every Russian would be dead. And this is why they think they are doing a good thing, actually, by killing Russians.
In September, a referendum was held in Donbass on whether to join Russia. In the West, it was dismissed as illegal and as a sham. But as anyone who has spent any time in Donetsk will know, the vast majority here supported it and voted to join Russia. What has become a proxy war between Russia and NATO is, at its root, a civil war. It is clear from my many months in Donbass that the vast majority no longer wish to be part of Ukraine and wish instead to be part of the Russian Federation. There is a peace to be had. The views of the civilians on both sides are listened to and respected.
Today's special.
Assalamu alaikum.
It's special for you. We present to you today.
Raditu billahi rabba wa bil islam deena. Raditu billahi rabba wa bil islam deena.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, in the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful, dear brothers, dear sisters, Salamun alaikum. You are welcome to another episode of today's special from IRIB English Radio. As usual, we choose an interesting topic to speak about. For today, we have forgiving and of course forgetting in the view of Islam. But first, we look at the calendar. On 26th of the month of Shaban, 1445 of the Islamic Lunar Hijri calendar, corresponding to the 17th of Isfand, 1402 of the Islamic Solar Hijri calendar, and the 7th of March, 2024 of the Christian Gregorian calendar. This is chapter Al Imran, verse 133, and the important point of it.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Wasari'u ila maghfiratin min rabbikum wa jannah. وَجَنَّةٍ عَرْضُهَا السَّمَاوَاتُ وَالْأَرْضُ أُعِدَّتْ لِلْمُتَّقِينَ.
And hasten to forgiveness from your Lord, and a garden as wide as the heavens and earth, prepared for the righteous.
لَا إِلَهَ إِلَّا اللَّهُ لَا إِلَهَ
Bless your day with contemplation on the verses of the Holy Quran.
In this verse, the effort and endeavor of good doers is likened to a spiritual race, the goal of which is forgiveness of Allah and the eternal blessings in heaven. Since attaining any spiritual rank is not possible without being purified from sins by His forgiveness, the goal of this spiritual race firstly is forgiveness and secondly is heaven. Then at the end of the verse, it clearly declares that His heaven with its wonderful splendor has already been prepared for the pious ones.
Shukran ya Rabbi, shukran. Hadayta qalbi, shukran. Wa'ta darbi, shukran. Shukran ya Rabbi,
shukran ya Rabbi, shukran. Hadayta qalbi, shukran. Nawwarta darbi, shukran.
We're speaking about forgiving and forgetting. Prophet of Islam, Muhammad al-Mustafa, peace be upon him and his pure progeny, said, "Do not harbor or grudge against one another, nor jealousy, nor enmity, and do not show your backs to another and becomes as fellow brothers and slaves of Allah. It is not lawful for a Muslim to avoid speaking with his brother beyond 3 days. As mentioned in the hadith on the forgiveness, we see this essential virtue in the sublime character of the blessed Prophet Muhammad. We have heard many prophetic traditions in regards to his ultimate forgiveness and how that attribute eventually results in a rewarding spiritual outcome. Even when non-Muslims disrespect him, he showed no grudge. Instead, he was patient and always kind to them, which led all of those he affected to become virtuous Muslims in the world. Subhanallah. Indeed, forgiveness is a virtue for the brave and patient, and we should strive toward becoming forgiving Muslims, although it could be truly difficult sometimes.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, in the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful. This is Ali, and we are going to talk about the essence and importance of forgiveness. So what is the best possession and wealth with regard to our discussion that is forgiveness? Humans have two attitudes towards money and monetary issues and fall into two categories. The first group consists of those who earn wealth and keep it for themselves. This attitude spells doom for humanity. The Messenger of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala said, whoever devotes himself to hoarding wealth and prefers it over everything else will be destroyed. The second group consists of people who put money into circulation and not cause it to stagnate. They see their wealth as flowing water. Putting money into circulation can be of two types. Sometimes money circulates, but not with forbearance, like all cases related to buying and selling. What happens in the market is that money circulates, but no one shows forbearance towards money or goods. The second type occurs when money circulates, but nothing is received in return. This situation only refers to one quality, that is generosity. A generous person performs several good deeds. First, they work hard and use their strength to engage in productive activities. Second, their effort leads to earning income. Moreover, they do not prevent money from circulating. Rather, they earn with one hand and give with the other hand. The next form is that the money they donate is without expectation of return, not receiving anything in exchange. In other words, generosity means not obstructing the flow of money, not causing it to stagnate, not hoarding it, and allowing money to come from one direction and go to another direction with forbearance.
IRIB English Radio presents today's special, Every Day for 15 Minutes.
Be like the sun shining with light. Be like a rose spreading its fragrance in every palm.
Today's special.
Be like the earth, humble and wise. Be like the rain pouring all your love to every soul.
How to forgive someone. One way can be making dua for you and others. The experience of forgiveness in Islam is supposed to be wholesome, selfless, and a liberating journey. If someone has hurt you so badly, no words could describe the pain you're going through, then it is best to make dua for yourself and for those who have hurt you. Before you rush into making dua to pour your heart out to Allah, please do not make dua against the person who has hurt you. Instead, work on beautifying your character so that Allah protects you from all evil desires and emotions that can serve a relationship. O Allah, I seek refuge in you from evil character, evil actions, and evil desires. Perform ablution and stand up in prayer and ask from Allah the Almighty to grant you the strength and mercy to forgive others. Rush to forgive. The Messenger of Allah, peace be upon him, his pure progeny, said, the person in whose heart there is rancor against his Muslim brother will not be pardoned. The reason forgiving is so difficult is that it hurts. It is challenging to feel compelled to draw closer to someone who has hurt you, especially by forgiving. Forgiving in Islam doesn't mean that we are not allowed to feel or acknowledge that hurt, and it entails that we see a great purpose and the bigger picture. Learning to adopt a forgiving nature will only help us. It does not mean we're allowing ourselves to be taken advantage of, since the decision is with complete awareness and intent to please Allah. It means we can see a greater value in learning to forgive and let go than to in holding.
You know, Yusuf alayhi salam's brothers, who caused so much pain to the family for so many years. And finally, when the family is reunited, they apologize for everything that they did. They apologize. Now, you know, istighfar to Allah is different from asking another human being to forgive. When Allah forgives, and if you Allah accepts your tawbah, all your past is removed. Everything is gone. But if you've been hurting me for 10 years, and then you came and said sorry, and even if I cried and I forgave you, does that mean I forgot those 10 years? No. Is the memory sometimes come back and hurt me again? Sure. Is it going to recur? And you say, no, I thought you forgave me. No, it doesn't work that way. Because human beings are not capable of forgiving other human beings in the same way that Allah can forgive. The forgiveness of human beings is something else, and the forgiveness of Allah is something else. And sometimes human beings aren't even able to forgive. As a matter of fact, their father, Yaqub told them, "Sawfa astaghfiru lakum Rabbi." I can't even ask Allah to pray. I'm not even going to pray for you right now. I will though. But not right now. Right now I'm still in a very bad mood. So in other words, he couldn't get himself to make immediate istighfar for them, for his own sons. You find the case of Muhammadur Rasulullah, rahmatan lil alameen, a mercy, loving mercy for all of humanity, all people. His own uncle, when he was killed in battle, and Hind did what heinous crime she did, she chewed off of his corpse. Later on, Hind became Muslim. But the Prophet couldn't face her. He couldn't see her. Because what she's done is left too much of a scar. There's a ghil there, there's a feeling there that you can't just get rid of. So this happens. And the reason I wanted to bring this to your attention is sometimes these feelings are like that nail that got drilled into the armor. Or you feel like you have to hold on to that grudge or that feeling or that protectiveness. You want to keep a distance from a person like that because you feel that if you let your guard down, that you'll get attacked again. That you'll be hurt again. So it becomes sort of a self-defense mechanism for you. And even though, you know, when we don't understand these things, we come to people that have suffered years of abuse or that have been wronged in the most terrible of ways, and we just tell them, just forgive, it's okay. Well, you don't know what the depth of the problem is. And, you know, we can encourage each other to forgive, but actually only Allah Azza wa Jalla knows who is capable and who is not capable.
Forgiving and forgetting, we should know more and more, and of course practicing them. So inshallah, we follow this interesting and necessary topic on the next episode of today's special from IRIB English Radio. So follow us on parstoday.ir, the tab Call of Islam. The archive of all the programs are there. Please find today's special. Thank you very much and have a nice time.
La ilaha illallah, Allah Rabbi, Muhammad Nabi, Aliyun Imami. La fata illa Aliyun Imami, Aliyun Imami, Aliyun Imami. La ilaha illallah, Allah Rabbi, محمد نبي علي إمامي. لا فتى إلا علي علي إمامي علي إمامي علي إمامي.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio. Thank you.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.